Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name is Kerry Stevenson, and I'm pretty excited today, ladies and gentlemen, because I've had them on before. Tiete Minerals, ASX code is TIE. Now, they're a West African, not just explorer, a developer, soon to be a producer. And when I saw the numbers that came out from their DFS, which has been released this week, I had to jump on the phone to Mark Strizek and say, Mark, I need to get you on and talk about this to our investor audience, because the numbers are pretty stunning. So, Mark, welcome back to Small Caps. Great to see you. Love that background. Very smart. Mark, before we get into the DFS and the numbers, which have been extraordinary, for those who don't know, most people should, give a brief overview of who are Tiete Minerals.
Kerry, so look, we're a small company. We've got our MD, Kagan Wong, who's been working in West Africa. Initially was in Liberia during Ebola, did the smart thing, jumped across into Cote d'Ivoire in 2012 and was able to peg this ground. He's a mining engineer. You know, he's got a 3.35 million ounce discovery under his belt. Kagan, I met him at Indaba in 17 and really liked what he was up to, and was able to join the board with, along with Francis Harper, who was had founded West African Resources with Richard Hyde.
Yes.
So we were able to list the company in 2018. And I think our record shows we've grown very quickly. We've got a great team of national geologists, Ivorians, who are really excited about the future prospects. We've also been able to pick up Matt Wilcox from West Africa. Matt the Builder and his team have just come out of building Sanbrado for Richard Hyde, which was a roaring success. And, he's really itching to get on the ground there and get Abidjar built.
Okay, well, Matt, so we go from Bob the Builder, it's Matt the Builder. Just remember that, ladies and gentlemen, Matt the Builder. Well, let's talk about these compelling results from the DFS, because from a PFS to a DFS, have they surprised you to the upside, or were you saying, listen, Kerry, I actually knew this was going to happen, but I had to make sure that we did it properly?
Yep, Kerry, look, there's a bit of both. We were in the fortunate position that we were well through an infill drilling program when the PFS came out. And that's why we were comfortable presenting, we called it an upside case there, which was just under 1.5 million ounces recovered. That drilling, we've got the resource model away in July, and that's really allowed the engineers to do the work. So we've, across all the metrics, we've been able to deliver a much better outcome, a much more profitable outcome, more ounces than the PFS. So look, it's I think from everyone.
Sorry to interrupt you, Mark, but for those that don't know, the ounces from the PFS to the DFS, just explain those a little bit and the upside that came with that.
Yeah, so we had in the PFS, we had an ore reserve of 860,000 ounces. We now have an ore reserve of 1.45 million ounces. So that's a big uplift by anyone's measure. We had a life of mine in the PFS of, it was just on around about 8 years or so, and there was a production of 1.1 million ounces coming from AG. That's now moved up to 1.7 million ounces. So that's another big uplift. And importantly, with this new resource model, the mining engineers have delivered a fantastic mining schedule. We've been able to get in early at some higher grades at AG Core. And you can see that from the production. We've got 260,000 ounces in the first year of gold. And then that's produced at $651 an ounce US. So that's a great number. And life of mine, we've taken this project, before I get to life of mine, within the 6 years, we've got 1.2 million ounces for 200,000 ounces a year. So we're really knocking on the door there of moving into a top 20 producer in West Africa. So that's the mining engineers have done a fantastic job in pulling together a feasibility DFS standard mining plan. It's supported, it's underpinned by, we've got some contract mining numbers in there. We've got detailed metallurgical grade recoveries. Abujar really stands out in that the ease, it's a very undemanding ore. Recoveries are very good. There's a lot of gravity gold in the system as well. And also,
when you say, sorry, again, when you say it's undemanding ore, that's an unusual comment. What do you mean by undemanding ore?
It's the amount of, look, it comes down to the bottom line is how much money do I have to spend to break this ore down to be able to recover the gold? And this ore is, the fresh ore is very, very soft. When you look at other projects in West Africa, they're looking at three-stage grinding and so forth. Okay. We've got just a simple SAG mill. So it's that's where it's shown in the bottom line. We've got costs there of it's US around about $8.10 for the grinding or producing, getting that ore through the mill, and it gets down about $7.50. So that's really what I mean. It's undemanding. It's very easy to grind this up. And it always, as in everything in life, it comes down to the dollars and cents. And for this ore, it's very, very low.
And I guess that's what, because when you said that, you know, 260,000 ounces, it's $651, mm-hmm. that's got to be in the lowest quartile of gold, any gold mine around the world, wouldn't it?
Yep. Look, it's a great number. And you can see there, we've been able to get to that. The other aspect compared to the PFS is that in the PFS, we had a much more expensive, what we call a pre-stripping component, whereas in the DFS, as a result of that updated resource model, we've been able to really reduce that down to its only 4 months, which is pretty conventional of getting the mining guys on site, doing site works, establishing and positioning some material in some stockpiles so that when that mill is built by Matt and the team and it's turned on, it's got material there, as we're starting to develop the mine, that you can get very quickly up to speed. And, it's a great result by the mining engineers.
Do you know, Mark, whenever I've spoken to you, I've always been impressed with the way Tieto doesn't necessarily do things the way everybody else does. As an example, you have your own rigs, which means you've been able to pull the cost of drilling down, which I thought was a really good way of going about it. So it's sort of giving value to shareholders. In terms of the time frame now, because right now you're in development, but once you get into production, that's a massive uplift for shareholders. And that's what I wanted to make sure our audience understood today, that Tieto Minerals is now not just going to be in development stage for 5 years, because you're talking about potentially very aggressively turning around and saying, we are going to go into construction, we're going to build the mine, and we're going to be actually pouring gold potentially Q4 next year. What has given you the chutzpah, in a way, to go from listing in 2018 to pouring gold in 2022? That's aggressive, but it's been done with, I guess, a good solid foundation.
Yeah, look, that's right, Kerry. I mean, we're all shareholders. We're very heavily invested, we've been able, we're not afraid of taking on those extra challenges. And the drilling has been an absolute boon for us, because it's probably saved our shareholders over the course of this journey so far, 70 million US or so in that order, were we to go out to contractors. The other aspect why we think we can do it is we've been able to secure a fantastic owners build team with a track record of delivering projects in West Africa. It's led by Matt Wilcox, who they've obviously completed the build for Richard Hyde in West Africa, and we've been very lucky enough to be able to attract a core group of people that like working together and building gold plants, and when they do it, they tend to do it under budget and ahead of schedule. So that's some fantastic attributes to have in a company.
Is that almost a challenge for them? Let's try and get it under budget and ahead of schedule. Is that almost like they're competitive in that way?
Well, look, definitely, and I think all the way along the journey, they've been, Matt and the guys have been learning, what the points the contractors to work with, and really treating development money and shareholders' money as their own money.
Oh, brilliant.
This is the key, is that we are happy to take on some of that risk, because the time value of money is immense. If we can bring this project forward, you do the sums, it always generates more money for shareholders. So that's what we've been able to do. It's the kind of stuff, look, we love what we're doing. I think Matt is, he wants to get over there and get this built. We've got the team in Cote d'Ivoire. So as COVID opens up here, and I think really the DFS is the milestone we needed to be able to provide for debt funders. And as the study's demonstrated, you can dig and look in the detail. I mean, you can see there it's very robust at gold prices, well below current spot and what we've seen for the last couple of years. So, we think we've got a very good chance of being able to deliver on that because this is going to throw out a lot of money and importantly, get that early payback.
At those numbers, Mark, you start to look at it and go 260,000 ounces, 651. Even if the current gold price had a little bit of pullback, you're still throwing off a lot of cash. You mentioned Matt Wilcox and his team. They've built these sorts of plants before. Are you confident? You know, you've said he's going to deliver. Give me the time frame of where you are now and where. How's that going to look? Give us a visual on where's the funding going to come from and what are the stages that they're going through?
Right. So in terms of build in West Africa, they've done Bully Bissa for Nordgold and they built Sanbrado for Richard Hyde. And they also came out of a build in Siberia for Nordgold called Gross. So got the runs on the board. And we've been able to have Matt involved through the PFS and the DFS. We've moved into detailed engineering. So that gives us we've committed some funds and we've certainly he's working within a constrained budget, but he's been able to do the work that matters before committing the big expenditure. We've got things like vendor data. We're well advanced with Primero on the detailed engineering. We had the guys at Mintrex completing the DFS. So we are really have those estimates that have gone into the DFS are probably closer to an engineering, a building estimate in terms of the level of detail, the tender backup, vendor data and real world pricing. So that's important. And also the team are there constantly talking to the likely subcontractors that'll be working with us on the ground for the build. Because obviously, our team is going to supervise, but we are going to be relying on other contractors that have been building and working in the area. The same as if we were to go to one of the major contractors to do it. So we're kind of cutting out the middleman, all the info we're getting is that there's plenty of capacity. We've obviously seen some escalation in shipping and so forth and some other areas and logistics, but we've been able to factor that in. And on the DFS side, obviously, as we talked about, we've reduced a significant amount of pre-strips. There's a lot of money that's come out of that. The timeframe, look, we've been engaging with lenders since the PFS. And so now it's been, as we're providing them with more detail, that level of risk comes down from their side. And we think we've got a great opportunity to be able to get a package together. Obviously, it's in the hands of the debt guys or the project funders, but getting this DFS out now and allowing them to see these numbers as our shareholders can also, there's a lot of interest.
Speaking of there being a lot of interest, were you surprised at how well the DFS came out? Or, I mean, Mark, we've spoken before, and when I speak to you, I love your passion and I like the way that you think a little bit differently, but have those numbers surprised you, number one? And number two, has in putting those numbers out to the market, how's the market reacted?
So number one, obviously with the drilling, we had an inkling, and that's why we were very comfortable presenting that in the PFS. We presented some upsides, some scoping level studies. Yeah. The drilling wasn't quite there, but we'd seen enough results to go, look, we're gonna get a nice uplift. So for ourselves, there's still a bit of surprise, but we knew it was going to move in this direction. On the market side, on our shareholders' side, look, I think they've been blown away by the numbers. So it's really nice to be able to, we said by the end of the quarter, and to be able to deliver on that, and to be able to deliver these, you know, it's a stunning set of metrics by all accounts, from mining to finance, and financial numbers, I should say. So look, it's really pleasing. And I think looking at our record, we do always try, and we set ourselves very aggressive targets. So lots of sleepless nights and so forth. But I mean, how exciting is it to be able to see a line of sight on producing that first gold bar? It's fantastic, Kerry.
Well, yeah, and I do congratulate you on that. But one of the things that I also want to talk about is there's a lot of focus on those first gold bar pours, and that is exciting. But I think there's also some upside that perhaps the market, because it's focused over here on these numbers looking so good, there's still some exploration upside around this project as well, isn't there?
Absolutely. And having this drilling team, this machine that can drill 10,000 metres a month underground, we had that in the scoping study. There's no underground in the DFS. It's purely open pit. That's something that we still see as a target, and we're planning to drill 5,000 metres before the end of the year to assess that. We're also covering ourselves off with the first 2 years of production. And on the regional scale, we've got 20 targets, 20 prospects that are in a 10-kilometre radius of trucking to where the mill would be at Abidjar. So plenty of upside. And then on a bigger scale, there's 70 k's of strike length as well. So there's a lot of, look, in a nutshell,
we're going to be busy. Did you say 7-0?
That's right. So we've got three tenements to make up. We've really only drilled the middle one, you know, in any anger, and still we've probably got about 10%, so a lot of upside. And we've also, between AG and APG, the 7Ks of mineralized strike, we're poking some holes into there. So a lot of opportunity to add, more low, well, I would say low strip oxide feed. Love to find another AG core. That's still open down to 700 meters, so we'll be throwing more holes into that. So, you know, in a nutshell, there's a lot more upside here. And I think that's the key. As you think about that 6 years, okay, that next 5 years, what can come there? And, you know, you tick off these numbers and you go, right, okay, well, look, yeah, the guys are likely to uncover some more from just simple near site to near exploration around AG. The underground could well come in. We've demonstrated in the we threw in the presentation yesterday some of the numbers that are below the pit, and that drilling is still on wide spacing, but importantly, the system is persistent down to 700 meters, so it's just a simple matter of putting the holes in and seeing what comes out. So, and then we've also got from that scoping level in the PFS, we announced some results from a heap leach, and we're doing work on that now.
Right.
And that could be a bolt-on as well. It's something that's not really factored in.
Oh, wow.
But Matt had done this with Nordgold at Bullion Bissa. They built a 4 million ton CIL, and then they bolted on between 50 to 100,000 ounces a year of heap leach. So that could well happen.
There's just, it's a constant source of amazement to me as to how quickly you're going. But one of the things, a couple of things, I think it's important for our listeners to understand that Tieto Minerals, they own their own drill rigs. The cost of a drilling per meter, I think, is what, $35 a meter, which is a lot less than if you were to bring in outside contractors. And that means that they can go ahead and get these 10,000 meters. And as I've said before, ladies and gentlemen, where do you find your next discovery? It's through the drill bit. So with Tieto drilling 10,000 meters every single month and continuing that exploration drilling, that's potentially even more upside for investors. Would you say, Mark?
Look, yes, you're absolutely right.
And in terms of Côte d'Ivoire itself and West Africa, for those people that say, look, I understand Western Australia, but West Africa, how, as a jurisdiction, talk to us about the government and the environment of working over there and how safe it is as a jurisdiction.
Government side, it's very good. It always ranks very highly in transparency, and that's always what we've found, is that we've got a good, well-resourced public servants that understand the law and work very fairly and equitably with us. And we've been working. Kagan's been in Cote d'Ivoire, or Tieto has been in Cote d'Ivoire since 2012. And built up great networks. We've got very good, strong management team as well. When you look at who's in there, you've got Perseus, and they've developed two mines, Sissingué and Yaouré. You've got Endeavour, who are probably sometimes missed a little bit in the ASX, who are a gorilla that are running Iti there and have been acquiring Teranga and Samarfo. And then you've got Barrick up there in the north as well. So there's majors with big mines, and have been able to operate very successfully in terms of the, you've got very good infrastructure, and that's where Cote d'Ivoire really sits above the neighbouring countries. Is a very good port, a great road network with its dual lane highway all the way to Yamoussoukro, oh, wow. And then TARD, a very extensive TARD network. And we've also got an expansive grid hydropower network that's available, so the power here will be nice and green. And we've also got an economy that mining only is a small part. It's about 2% of GDP. The government would like to take it to 4%, but it's also, it's very heavily on cocoa and coffee. And it's one of the cases that these economies are growing. Well, Cote d'Ivoire has been growing at 10% year on year. And sometimes you've always got to, because we're over there, you think of it, but you still think some of the stereotypes about Africa aren't, it's just not there. You've got an economy with lots and lots of millionaires. There still is. But as we did the ESG work, I think, and Matt commented on this, he's been working in countries, Guinea and Burkina Faso, the level of literacy of people that are still living in small farmlets around the site was very high. I think that's the case, is it's a very good place to work. The food's fantastic. I mean, it's going to Abidjan is great. I mean, it's with the water there, it's a fantastic setting compared to some of the other countries that are a bit more landlocked. So we do find it's a great jurisdiction, and government support. They're 10% partners in this project, and our other two founding, we've got Bamba and Fred as well, who are also getting between them have 2%. So we have 88%. So the government is very supportive in terms of the opportunities that mining provided here in Australia, for jobs, for royalties, for tax. The government will also be getting dividends out of the project, obviously they're going to be quite healthy. And we've recently been able to, Kagan's recently in country, and we've got quite a high level government appointee on the board of what's called the management company for the mining license. And in terms of the power line that we'll need to build, that's been given a project of national significance. Oh, it's good. Around about 32-33 Ks. But it will also be opening up reliable power to some of the communities that are to the north of us. So on all measures, we get fair hearing, and we get you can get access. There's an interest in seeing this project being developed. And I think obviously, Perseus, Jeff would say the same thing in Cote d'Ivoire is a great location. West Africa is a very good location. And when we look at the discoveries that are being made in West Africa, these are all greenfields deposits, and they're coming on strong and fast, and they're generating lots and lots of free cash flow.
Sounds like a lot of work to be done between now and next year, but I have absolutely no doubt that Tieto Minerals will deliver once again. But we're running out of time, Mark. One of the things I want to ask you, I always do this, a lot of investors listening right now, give us three reasons, Tieto's been around, give us three reasons why, apart from the fact that you're going to be producing it, what was it, $651 an ounce, three reasons why the investors should be sitting up and taking notice and looking at Tieto Minerals right now.
Kerry, right, so number one, when you look at the value, our enterprise value against the value of this project, there's a significant amount of headroom there. So I think that's something that needs to be considered. Number two, when we look at the performance of companies that have gone through from the development phase as we are into becoming production, again, there's an incredible amount of uplift and value that comes from that. Yeah. And number three, we've definitely talked about the exploration. This is purely a snapshot. As we talked about that gold production, there's so much exploration upside here, and the ability that even while we're in the middle of working through a development phase, we'll still have the drill rigs working 10,000 metres a month, so lots and lots of news flow and the ability to grow the resources at an extremely rapid pace.
Well, I can feel the excitement with you, Mark. I so appreciate it because I know how busy you've been, and I remember back in 2019 when you were at the Australian Gold Conference in Sydney talking about the project, how far you've come. So ladies and gentlemen, there you've got it, from exploration to development and now going in towards production, and that's where there's going to be a massive value uplift. Do your own research, of course, but I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today. Mark Strizek, Executive Director for Tietto Minerals, congratulations, and we look forward to chatting to you when the next news comes along.
Thanks very much, Kerry. It's been fantastic talking to you.